It's time now for today's cover story, Evangelical Art and Entertainment. Just last week on MTV's Hard Rock Live, a rock band called Switchfoot showed up to play. This song, Dare You to Move, is a top 20 hit on pop radio, and the band's new album, The Beautiful Letdown, has gone platinum, selling more than a million copies. I dare you to move. But way before Switchfoot became MTV darlings, they were a number one band on Christian radio, distributed by a Christian record label. Now, when I was a little kid, the only Christian entertainment I was aware of was a claymation TV series on Sunday mornings called Davy and Goliath, with Davy the boy and Goliath his dog.
It says danger, Davy. Let's go back.
Why?
Danger.
Don't be an old scaredy cat.
Who's a cat? Who's scared?
The show was produced by the Evangelical Lutheran Church. The basic moral every week was that Davy could avoid getting into trouble if he'd only listened to his parents. And sometimes, as I recall, Jesus' name did come up. Today, Christian evangelical content is booming and popping up in places it never used to, not just in movie theaters, but in mainstream book and record stores and all over cable TV.
This is the Trinity Broadcasting Network, celebrating 30 years of God's miracles.
And their message is more clearly a call to faith than ever before. To talk about this Christian pop phenomenon, we've invited the writer and Columbia University religion professor Randall Balmer to Studio 360. He was raised as an evangelical and now teaches about religion at Columbia. He's the author of Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, A Journey into the Evangelical Subculture in America, and he's also written a memoir about growing up evangelical called Growing Pains, Learning to Love My Father's Faith. Randall Balmer, welcome to Studio 360.
Good to be with you.
First of all, who are evangelicals? How should we define this group?
I usually use a fairly functional definition that consists of two or three parts, depending on my mood at the time. First of all, an evangelical is somebody who takes the Bible seriously to the point of reading it literally, all the way from Genesis and the account of creation at the beginning of the Hebrew Bible, all the way through the book of Revelation at the end of the New Testament, which most evangelicals regard as a kind of blueprint for understanding the end of time. The second criterion is that an evangelical is someone who believes in the centrality of a conversion or a born-again experience, which is comes from the third chapter of St. John in the New Testament, when Nicodemus visits Jesus by night and asks how he can enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus replies that he must be born again. So this becomes a transformative moment in the lives of evangelicals. I sometimes add a third criterion, and that is an evangelical is someone who, as you suggested earlier, is obligated or feels obligated to proselytize or to evangelize others, to bring others into the fold. Although my observation over the course of, I guess, nearly 50 years of watching the evangelical subculture is that evangelicals talk about doing this a great deal more than they actually do it.
You say that there's this interesting question about whether evangelicals are really about and invested in getting their message out, proselytizing, evangelizing, getting new followers in or not. And which gets us to our subject today, which is all of this effusion of television, movies, fiction, the rest of music that is Christian in some way. Do you feel as though it's mostly preaching to the converted, literally, or are they trying to get people on the edge to come and join them?
Well, they're certainly trying to get people on the edge to come and join them and even to bring new people in. I did a chapter on Jars of Clay, which is another music group that we'll probably talk about later in this program, that is a fascinating phenomenon. And they have been able to cross over. That's the big word within the evangelical music world, is trying to cross over onto the secular charts. And Jars of Clay has been able to do that because the music is really quite good, I think. And in the course of my interview with them, I noted that a friend of mine had told me that one of their songs was actually quite popular in one of the gay clubs here in New York. And they were momentarily put off by this. They didn't exactly know how to respond. But the response, once they composed themselves, was, that's great, because that means that the gospel is being propagated in places where we wouldn't normally go. And that's the sort of ethic that I think drives a lot of this pop cultural stuff.
Is this kind of Christian pop a wholly new phenomenon? And certainly in my lifetime, as I said at the beginning, it seems like it is new. But is there historical precedent?
Well, I think there's historical precedent for finding innovative ways to communicate the gospel to the culture. And I think that's what's so striking to me about evangelicalism throughout American history. And if you go back to the Great Awakening, you had George Whitefield coming over from England. And George Whitefield had been trained in the London theater. And so he knew how to communicate very effectively with dramatic pauses and using elocution to his advantage. Contemporaries said he could bring tears to your eyes simply by saying Mesopotamia. He was that gifted as an orator. And so in a culture that at that time had no theatrical tradition, Whitefield comes through and he's an expert orator, and he's able to communicate quite effectively to the masses, not in churches, but out in the open air and in barns or in the village green, or in one notable example on Society Hill in Philadelphia. In the 20th century, you had the great urban revivalists such as Billy Sunday and later Billy Graham, who adapts all sorts of very innovative communications technologies as a means for propagating the gospel.
Is there a fundamental difference between this stuff, this pop music or that movie, and the, you know, 2,000-year history of artists basically out of the church creating art?
No, I think that the artistic expression has always been part of the church. I think where the difference lies is that in earlier centuries of church history, the patronage tended to be from the church or even from the state or from wealthy individuals, whereas now
It's the marketplace.
The evangelicals know how to use the marketplace. And believe me, some of the things we'll talk about today, the people who created them are making money off of it, and they know how to use the market to their own advantage and at the same time to preach the gospel.
Doing well by doing good.
That's right.
You grew up evangelical, and you wrote a book about your struggle with your faith. As a kid growing up in this strict evangelical household in Iowa, what was your consumption of culture? Did you have TV, movies?
We didn't have TV in my early childhood, although I've never been able to determine if that was because of moral objections to television or the fact that we were fairly poor. My father being, at that time, a country minister, a country parson, if you will, really did not have a whole lot of money, or at least that I was aware of. So that may have been a big part of it. But I think there was larger moral objections to television, which, frankly, I now, as a father of several teenagers, I think I share those objections, but maybe for slightly different reasons. But generally, there was a suspicion of the larger culture. There was a sense that the larger culture was alien. It was corrupt, and it was itself corrupting. I grew up within this subculture, as I call it, in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s. And the most damning thing that you could say about a fellow believer was that she or he was worldly. Worldliness was the worst sort of sin that you could commit, because it meant that you were not maintaining your own purity.
Well, so when we see this explosion of Christian movies and Christian novels and TV and all the music and all the rest of it, does that mark, at least for some substantial part of the population you're talking about, an end to that suspicion? Because those are worldly and they make money.
Absolutely. I think what happened along about 1980, I think the evangelical subculture, it's still a subculture. That is, it has its own values. It has its own institutions that sustain it. But along about 1980, it ceased being a counterculture.
And I think it had to do with all sorts of cultural forces that were all of a sudden in play, beginning, I think, with the presidential campaign of Jimmy Carter, who talked about being a born-again evangelical Christian. Reagan signals that evangelicals have finally arrived. And along with that, the whole notion of conspicuous consumption and so forth, and evangelicals went along for the ride.
And to the degree those walls are being made permeable, and all of the you know, as I spoke about watching the Trinity Broadcasting Network and all this sort of merger with the culture at large, what does that portend for 50 years down the line? Is this kind of fiercely separate Christian culture going to lose its sense of separateness even more?
It's hard to say. That's a really good question because I think some of that has happened already. But the real genius behind evangelicalism, besides what I mentioned earlier, the genius for communications, is the ability of evangelicals to position themselves on the margins of the culture, whether they are or not, but to think of themselves on the margins of the culture. So even with all of this pop culture that is flooding the marketplace, there's still a sense that it's not mainstream, that the world or the larger society is not fully accepting us or our ideas, and that allows the evangelicals, I think, to keep their edge.
So that's a being rejected a little bit is a desirable thing.
My reading of American religious history is that the most successful religious movements in American history have positioned themselves as exclusive rather than inclusive, on the margins rather than at the center of the culture.
My guest today is the Columbia University professor Randall Balmer. I'm Kurt Anderson, and we're talking about evangelical pop culture.